Hi there, Logan here, one of your co-hosts with the Better Events podcast. And this week's episode, we are talking all about how to navigate those tough and stressful, but honestly expected moments that happen at events. We share our stories, how we approach conflict and challenges in events, and offer some tips for you as you work through your own communication style. Before we get into it, we are doing a listener-powered episode where we want to hear from you. We want your questions. Feel free to send them in writing to us at our email address at bettereventspod@gmail.com or record yourself and send us a voice memo to that email address, and you might just hear yourself on an upcoming exciting listener episode. But without further ado, let's get into this week's topic, all about challenging situations at events.
Welcome to the Better Events Podcast. Join two event strategists, Logan Clements and Mary Davidson, who believe we can all create, host, and attend better events. In this podcast, you will learn about event strategy and actions that you can use today as an event host, planner, or manager. Hear directly from the people who are creating innovative and inspiring events today and tomorrow, and grow your business along the way. Now, let's get started, and thanks for listening to the Better Events Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Better Events Podcast. This is Mary Davidson, one of your co-hosts, and I'm joined by our other co-host, Logan Clements. And today we are excited to get into our conversation. We are chatting, kind of a challenging conversation because we're talking about navigating challenging situations at events. But before we get into it, we have, of course, a conversation starter. And given the time of year, this is our question for today. Logan, this is for you. Do you usually celebrate Valentine's Day? And do you even think if it's a real holiday or is it fake? Because some people think it's not real.
This is a great question, Mary. I feel like, yes, I do celebrate Valentine's Day. This year, unfortunately, I will not be with my partner. I'm on the road. So I will not be really, I feel like, celebrating it formally on Valentine's Day. So I do think it's a made up holiday, but I do like the intention behind it. When I was single, I know I got really into like Galentine's Day as like a really fun, and a bunch of friends in Shanghai, we would go and all get like manicures and pedicures, and the place we went would let us bring snacks and drinks. And it was really fun that even our friends who had significant others were like, well, this sounds more fun than a high pressure date night. So I think the sentiment's nice of just, you know, reminding folks that you care about, that you want to spend time with them, whether it's on the actual day or not. But this year I will be working. So I don't think I'll really be observing Valentine's per se. But Mary, how about you? Do you usually celebrate Valentine's Day? And is it real or fake to you?
I like kind of celebrate it. It's nothing like, it's not like a big celebration. I think it's like a fine holiday. In the past, like when I was single, it was very much like Single Awareness Day. It's what I felt deeply. But I Googled it. If we want to know if Valentine's Day is actually real, the history, according to history.com, says that during the Middle Ages, it was commonly believed in France and England that February 14th was the beginning of birds' mating season. So the more you know, February 14th.
You like the birds.
We like the birds. So perhaps it's real. It's a fine holiday, but whether you celebrate it or not, if you're listening to this, hopefully you have a good day.
Let's do a hard pivot away from Valentine's Day.
A hard pivot.
Because Valentine's Day is all about love. And what are we talking about today, Mary?
We're talking about
challenging situations at events and how to navigate them. Because this podcast is all about education and learning from the community. And this is just one of those things that while it's not as fun to talk about, Mary and I were literally before recording this being like, this is, you know, it's not a fun space to live in to reflect on the stress and the complicated situations you've been in, but it is also kind of like your war stories, your stories that you can come back to of, you know, how proud you are that you overcame these challenges. So we're just going to give you a window into Mary and my process for how we've dealt with some of these situations. We're going to talk first broadly more about how we navigate challenging situations and then get into some examples that you can infer whether they are real or just a hypothetical situation that we're throwing at you. First, Mary, like how would you define challenging situations at events?
I think I would define them as something that doesn't go according to plan, something that someone is upset about, or maybe if we're running late, maybe that's too specific, but that one really yeah. seems like a challenging situation. So yeah, I mean, that's how I would define it, something that doesn't go according to plan. What about you? Would you add anything to that definition?
No, apart from, I just think anytime there's like heightened emotions around anything, it can be a guest, it could be your client, it could be even between vendors. Like, it's like you're saying, it's not according to plan, but it's also just like sometimes humans are humans and it's just going to be a challenging situation. So, not to scare you listeners, because there are ways that you can prep for these things, but there's often, as a planner, and why I think I also, we love events so much, is because you can't know everything that's going to happen. And there are going to be these unknowns, and that's kind of what makes it fun, even if it is fun with a little bit of stress. But do you believe, Mary, there's like one way to react in a situation?
I don't know if I'd say it's fun, but it's, but no, I don't think that there, I mean, I don't think that there is one way to react. Yes, I think there are multiple ways to react to these situations. A lot of it is, I think, circumstantial, but I do also think that there's a lot of overarching like reactions and golden rules and things like that, just customer service wise, which is really what a lot of events are when you're actually like, you know, implementing the event, like in the event.
Yeah, same thing. I think there's no one way. And that's also just for listeners, as Mary and I give our examples of how we've handled situations or would handle them. You know, you don't have to necessarily agree. I think it's just to open you up that there are multiple ways to solve an issue. And a lot of it, I think you just had mentioned, Mary, was like context. It depends on who you're dealing with, what your relationship is with that person, to help you kind of figure out exactly what's the right, you know, mixture of skills. But what are your, do you have any like golden rules or standards that you use like when you're thinking about these challenges? Because we really are a customer service industry. So it's, you know, when you're providing good customer service, what are some of your standards or things you fall back on?
Well, I heard someone say once that it's our job as like event planners, event professionals, to be the problem solvers. And so that's one thing I think I would say is a standard is to find a solution to problems, to those problems that do arise and will arise because they just will. So someone who can find a solution, I think, is a good standard. And then also just being calm while doing that, acknowledging the situation, you know, find the solution, because all in all, people just want to be heard. So whatever it takes to, I think, make that happen with events, which is literally customer service. So that's probably how I would summarize the golden rules. I will say it's way easier said than done. That's what I'll say. Especially for people like me. I don't like people telling me what to do, and I don't like uncomfortable situations. So this to me is a challenge. For sure.
Yeah. Well, and we have a whole episode too that we'll put in the show notes for you about etiquette, event etiquette, or like hospitality at events. Cause I think that's also a good, that dovetails really nice with this conversation we're going to have. Cause yeah, one of my golden rules, I feel like Mary is right aligned with yours, is just that your energy is contagious. And that just means that there is a power with the energy you're putting into the situation. So if you are coming at it with a smile and very open energy, and like you're saying, listening, you know, that person's going to at least maybe not completely reflect it back to you, but they are going to absorb some of that. And that can help diffuse a situation. But also on the flip side, if you come at it already irritable, irritated, upset, defensive, it's, you know, they're going to want to clash with that. And so just knowing, I hate saying like you can get a long way with a smile, but a lot of times, honestly, you can fake your smile if you need to, but like just coming at it with just an open mind and a smile on your face, even if inside you're like really upset, it can just help you diffuse a lot of situations.
Yeah. And I'm curious, before we get into some examples, like if you don't mind me asking, Logan, because I think this is interesting to help paint the picture for those listening. If you're like, maybe I've been in this situation, maybe I haven't, how do you like physically react to these challenging situations? Do you get sweaty? Oh, I get sweaty.
Yeah.
And like hot and nervous and all the things. But you just work through it, which I think is the point. But yeah, how do you physically react?
It's a great question. Cause I think some of it, yeah, I'll have palm sweat. It's so funny because it's not even standardized, because there's different scenarios. For me, there's certain challenges that like, if it's something I could have avoided and it's something I'm responsible for having not checked or something, like I'll feel like the bottom of my stomach has just dropped out. Like it's just dropped out of my stomach, and I potentially might start feeling like I want to throw up, because it's like, oh my gosh, this is on me. Versus if it's something external, so something that was kind of out of my control, the weather's acting crazy, there's nothing I could do, you know, act of God or somebody else doing something, then I'm with you too. Like maybe it's just sweaty palms or just feeling the pressure. in those situations. But there's so much we talk about. I feel like I mentioned it on this podcast before, but like event chill, I think in our episode about event planner skills, like that's mm-hmm. one that you can have that physical reaction. You don't have to necessarily repress it, but just know that like externally, you still need to remain calm for other people or know when you need to step away to be like, let me freak out about this for a second and then handle, you know, the situation. Versus the only times I would say it's bad is if you start being noticeably upset, because then you're not really helping anybody.
It is challenging. I think the feedback I've gotten most about like my personal performance on events has been people saying, you're so calm. You're the most calm event person we've ever worked with. And almost to a point where I'm like, should I exude more not calmness? Because it's brought up so often. Maybe there's a balance there. Making sure, obviously, I still care about the event. Like, I hope there's balance. But I completely agree. I think it is important to bring that calm. And just like, I was talking to someone actually about this recently, because confrontations or conflict and things like that are challenging in general to navigate. And someone was telling me, which is obvious, but just to, sometimes if you need it to react appropriately, take a moment. And maybe you're trying to take that moment, like someone's in your face, but you get out of it quickly so you can take a moment, solve the problem. But like sometimes you need a moment so that you're not so reactionary to the situation, which I think is important really to recognize if that's something that you need. So that's just one other thought that I had. And also breathing helps. Let me say that. Just like that's what I found during events is like really breathing. Even if it's like 1 minute in a corner. Okay.
Oh, yeah. A deep breath totally helps. We love those. I think too, and we talk about this in the podcast, is like backup plans are really helpful. Like trying to get ahead. The more experience you have in events, the better you might get at anticipating what could go wrong. Again, we're not all nervous Nellies that the sky is falling, but like you do need to kind of think through what are some common, and I just did this for a client for a virtual event. Like I just said, let's talk through scenarios. What if this, it's like a networking event. I'm like, what if this table leader doesn't show up? What's the process? Who are we calling? If, an attendee doesn't show up, what's the process? Who are we calling? What if our speaker who's leading the entire event, what if they all of a sudden can't make it? And we talk through that so that, again, not saying it's going to happen, but then if it does happen, we've already talked through that process and maybe we need to remind each other, but you already know what's going to happen. And so this is helpful even in the context of like an in-person event, you know, for registration. If you have people working your registration table, and there's somebody's not on the list, like talk through that, like have those conversations ahead of time, because you're going to wish you did in the moment. And it's way easier to talk it out when you don't have attendees and venues, vendor people, or a timeline, like you can use your own pace. So really can't encourage or stress backup plans and just processes already.
We've really set the stage. So examples on challenging situations at events. We have a lot. And like Logan said, maybe they're real, maybe they're not. You'll never know. But Logan, do you want to kick us off with our first example?
Yeah, this one kind of, I'm starting to go there already thinking about registration. But the situation is you have a guest who comes to check in for your event and you don't have their badge. You don't have their name badge. They're nowhere in the system. Mary, how do you handle that situation?
Well, if you have the knowledge of who they are, I think is actually helpful. I think everyone should be like treated fairly, but if it's like a VIP, I think you might navigate the situation slightly different. But regardless, I think it's just whether you're communicating or it's the people who are running registration saying like, oh, no worries. Thank you so much. We'll get you taken care of. It's no problem. Like, so like you're calming them down. First of all, like you're supposed to be here. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then just say, just one moment. That's probably what I would do. And I would probably either, if I have the power to just create them one, figure out who I need to talk to get them seated appropriately. Maybe that's me making that call. Just fitting them in, solving the problem. This happens a lot, I will say. And so I think the question is, well, are they supposed to be here? And if so, where do they need to go? And if they're not, can they come? Like, is there a problem with them being here? And most times people will just squeeze them in.
Love that. I think I agree with everything you said. Even like a step further of an example I've seen done well is internally, we would call it the trouble table if you have, or the trouble person.
Yep.
If you have multiple people helping check folks in. So this person's not on your list. They're kind of slowing down your process for any of those reactions that Mary just mentioned. So you would direct them. And when I say internally, everyone working it, we call it the trouble table. You would never go to a guest, oh, please go down to the trouble table over there. But you could be like, oh, my colleague, Adam over there, he can help you. And Adam's sitting there and no one was in his line apart from the folks that are that more complex issue, or maybe they didn't pay or whatever the challenge is. If you're able to triage them out of the line, that keeps the rest of everyone moving smoothly. But the hard part is I wouldn't do that if that person's like ignored by themselves. I feel like that's the only wrong thing to do, is either to get upset at them or like push them to the side and then forget about them. That customer service is missing.
Yeah, totally. In this situation, it seems like the person who thinks they're supposed to be there and they don't have the badge are almost always like confused or like borderline like, no, I am supposed to be here. So it's like, yeah.
Responding kind of swiftly and validating. Yeah.
Another example is when you're in a program and the person who is speaking, whether it's a speaker, it's an MC, or maybe somebody like that, they're like, let's hear from the audience. And then they open up the mic and they'll pass it around or hand it to somebody. This totally depends what kind of event it is. But for like a seated dinner type of program event, this is where you can really lose your audience because you're giving the mic away to someone who isn't controlling the program from that point forward, which is really scary. Like, that's a scary thing as a planner, you know, you're like, or a producer, you're like, that's not part of the program. What are they doing? Yeah. And sometimes it can be okay. And then sometimes it can really not be, because depending on what kind of event it is, especially something like a fundraiser where you're like really trying to tug at people's heartstrings. If you lose people, that's like losing money directly. And so you really want to keep people's attention. So I would say a challenging situation is when the program, maybe I'll summarize it more broadly, doesn't go according to plan for some reason. And in this situation, it's because they're giving the power over to the audience. So that's what I would say about this one. And then how do you navigate it? Logan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you would have to, I mean, ideally you would talk about it ahead of time so you wouldn't be in the situation. But if it was, I think trying to get the attention, if you have a stage manager, someone near your stage who could then get your MC to either take back the mic if someone's talking, or, you know, only give one, let them have had one question or something like that. But you would want to avoid you as the planner person, like taking the mic out of someone's hands, because you're just essentially trying to rein everyone back in again. And as quickly as possible and as subtly as you can do it would be how I would try to navigate that. My next one is we have attendees are in a ballroom. Let's say you had dinner and now you want to get them out of the ballroom to make sure they go to this after party. How do you convince people to leave their tables of their friends and their food and their drink or their colleagues and head out to this? This is a situation where maybe you thought they were just going to walk out and go to your after party, and now you're stuck with all your attendees in the ballroom. The event's ended and you're like, you got to go. But how do you handle that without saying, you got to go?
Or even like if they don't leave the after party. If they just
Another problem to have. Yeah. Well, this is one that it would be that, you know, this is usually your client probably is coming up to you going, oh my gosh, why is no one leaving? Or maybe it's your crew, your team at the event being like, we need to go, or we're about to be in, you know, if you're working with like a union crew, it'd be, you know, you're going into overtime. It's going to cost the client money if we don't get everybody out of here so we can start loading out. That you would need to, this is where having like a voice of God come on the mic to try to, you know, entice people out. And or if you have like a DJ or music performer out in the after party area that they could potentially hear from the ballroom, they get them to start playing their music. If you needed to even have somebody that they knew who was an MC in that day or a speaker, hop on the microphone and let people know explicitly, hey, after party started, we got to go, guys. Or the more subtle ways is you turn all the lights on and have somebody on the client side maybe start going around to tables and encouraging folks to head out. But it's a tough one. That you want to think about, maybe if you already are asking people to do any kind of movements during your event, is how do you incentivize or make sure they know what you want them to do so that it's easier for them to listen.
Yeah, I would say something that you should probably try to avoid, which I have seen maybe, is that someone like yelling, like, come on, time to move. Or like, obviously that what I just did was way nicer than
oh no, the yelling or like physically breaking down the event around people.
Yeah.
I've witnessed that. And it's one that I just, it always, I'm like, oh gosh, you had no other options.
Another situation that I'd say could be challenging is when you arrive. Oh, I would say arrival times. So for example, you arrive to a venue and they are like, oh, you were supposed to be here an hour ago. We're surprised to see you now. We already have all the food set. And you're like, nope, this is actually our setup time. We don't need the food set for an hour. How are you going to keep it warm? And then looking back at the contract, this is all just hypothetical, right? Looking back at the
Totally.
contract and saying, no, this is our time. Now we're supposed to be here, and here's proof. And then they make it work, and it's fine, and it ends up being okay. But just like arrival times, this also is a problem, I think, with vendors a lot. You know, I'm sure Logan can speak to this too. Vendors arriving not at the time that was agreed upon, and things like that. So how do you navigate arrival time issues and situations?
Yeah, I think our other example we had listed was if you have a vendor who hypothetically got the date wrong and you called them to be
Yep.
like, hey, you almost here? And they're like, I wrote the date for tomorrow. Now they're running late. They're going to be 45 minutes late to your event. There are various ways to handle it. My intention for that would be, if especially if it's a vendor I recommended and I found, I would just get ahead of it and try to tell my client as soon as possible, but let them know, hey, this is happening. This person's running late. But I would also, as Mary had mentioned earlier, we are in the solutions problem-solving business. I would offer an alternative. So let's say, for example, maybe that vendor is like a DJ. Your DJ is running late, and your alternative is let's play a fun Spotify playlist while people are getting started, and then we'll make that transition once the DJ's here. But just kind of making sure if you're giving those news, that's my take. I've seen other planners who try to, hide it and kind of be like, maybe they just won't notice. And the hard part is sometimes depends on the client, but they often will notice. So I like to get ahead of it. How about you, Mary?
No, I agree. Trying to get ahead of it as much as you can. And then also just pivoting the program or whatever it is that's influenced by being late. Just you gotta move stuff around so that if you need someone at a certain time, you can wait for them if it's necessary. If not, the show must go on. Which I think is like also a really true statement with events. Sometimes the show must go on. You just keep going.
Yeah.
Move
Mary
past
and I,
it.
we had an event where our MC was late for like
Yep.
10 minutes, and we just had to
Yep.
make the show go, and the MC joined when they arrived.
Yep. You make it
The
work
show must
sometimes.
go on. Another scenario here would be you're in the pre-planning stage, so your event hasn't happened yet, and you realize your event is running way over budget. And in this scenario, it's not necessarily your budget, like as you as an individual or a freelancer, it's like the whole event. You're helping your client manage the whole event budget and it's way over. What do you, how do you handle that? Mary, I'll let you think on your answer. For me, it would be more, I mean, I again, transparency is a big one. I've learned it's one of my, through experience, it's one of like my values. So I'd rather just like sit down and be like, let's hash out the numbers, let's pull up the budget. Let's figure out where you can, or let you know it's going over. Is there an additional place that you can find the budget if you really want to keep all these things? Probably I'd look at the big ticket items and be like, do we really need all these things? Or is there a way to generate more revenue with a sponsorship or ticket sales or, however they're paying for the event? But often it is a tough conversation about figuring out what to cut. And this is where you, as the planner, can be helpful in knowing, Mary mentioned contracts earlier with venues, knowing those contracts. And knowing where you have opportunities to reduce or, cut, it's just going to help you get ahead of it because it is really hard to reel in an out of control budget.
Yeah, no, I completely concur. It's first of all, like have a budget. That's great. Well, I'm surprised how many events I'm a
Step
part of
one.
that like still don't have budgets. I'm like, okay. But then yeah, I mean, just like you said, prioritizing, figuring out what is more important that you want to shift your funds towards or not. Yeah, completely agree. Another challenging situation I would say is if there's an important component that someone wins, there's like a giveaway, maybe it's a raffle. Some type of certificate thing that someone can win from an event, and you lose the certificate. What do you do? And so I think there's a few different answers to this, but my first thing would be, please everyone listen to this. Before your event happens, make a copy of that certificate. Step one, proof you had it, proof you received it.
Backup plans.
Backup plans, make a copy. And then, depending on where the certificate came from, or like all of those things, sometimes it can be reissued depending on where it came from, which is the best case scenario, I would say. But then also just having people like keep their eyes out for things. And also, please don't put important pieces of paper in white generic envelopes with no branding on them. Like stuff like that can get tossed so easily, especially during event teardown. So if there's something of value like that, just make sure you know where it is. And there's like a system for who's holding it, touching it, moving it so that it won't get lost.
This is very helpful. I feel like if anything, even if you're not talking about raffle items, but just having a system for keeping track of important, valuable items, This could be applied to also, like, if you're at having an award show, the physical awards, making sure you know what box you put them in and where, and anything of value, making sure that's secured. My next example would be your client. We talked about budgets on this. We've talked about proposals, how it's fun to give people multiple options, kind of like a low, medium, high, or, you know, a good, better, and a best, I've heard other people call it. And let's say your client wants the best package. They want the most, but they want to pay the least. They want to pay the low budget. I would say past me when I first started my business, back to that mentality of kind of any business is good business. And I would be like, oh, okay, I think I can make it work, because so much of what we charge, at least in what we do, like Mary and I do, it's like the value of our time and our expertise, which I think when I first started, I definitely was just thinking it was the value of my time that I probably would have done that. But nowadays, if the budget gets cut, things get cut. And I can manage expectations that there is only so much you can do. And it's everyone's different. Sometimes you can make exceptions to it. But I mean, I always come in that situation with compassion, but also understanding to them that there's a reason there were three tiers, because the level of effort or materials or staff is different, and extra highlighting that. And then sometimes I found them to find a middle ground between maybe my lowest and my middle, because they can't afford the middle and they need it, you know, a little bit more. So just helping kind of, again, compassion there in that discussion. But I would highly encourage you, no matter how hard they're pushing, please don't give them your best package for your lowest rate.
I don't think I can add to that, because it was great. So completely, completely agree. And it's probably a challenge that will come up for you if it hasn't already. So let's see, maybe our last challenge.
How about you don't agree with another vendor, but don't want to fight in front of your client?
I mean, that's tough, because vendors can sometimes be like your greatest allies in an event. Like, if they do their job well, it just makes your job so much easier. So that is sincerely a challenging situation. I think, and it's tough too, because it's like, who's in charge in that situation? Is it you or is it them? Because they are the expert in what they're vendoring for, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, I would say the client is really the right person. So I'd be like, yeah, do what they want.
Yeah.
Not what I want, not what you want, do what they want.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, in the dealing with it, you can kind of defer to the decision maker. So if that's you or if that's mm-hmm. the client. But this is, again, where I feel like I would go with the energy is contagious and kind of the, you know, fake it till you make it with the smile. And then just make notes in the future, because that's one thing I do think from us working, like Mary said, vendors can be your biggest ally, but also, like, as much as we're all people persons, is that how you would say it? But
sure.
Like, you know, we all want to be well liked, but there's also just some people don't jive. Some people are not your cup of tea. They're not your person. Whatever how they handle situations maybe isn't how you agree with. It doesn't mean they're not good at what they're doing, but it just doesn't vibe with you. And that's just something to make note of. And maybe either you personally don't work with them again or in a different capacity, or have someone else on your team be their main contact. I think that's okay. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with that person. And like Mary mentioned, it really depends on the, like, your relationship with your client. If you think it's detrimental to the whole event, maybe that's a conversation you have with the client afterwards. But if it's just a personality thing that maybe you don't get along with, I think it's just thinking how you either can work less with them or create a buffer between them and yourself with someone else on your team or another person.
Totally agreed. Yes. Yep. Lots of power to choose if you work with them again or not, typically.
We love these. Again, the fun stories that Mary and I can tell. hopefully, listeners, though, we've helped you think through how you would react in some of these situations, given you some tools. So when you get, you know, when you have your own challenging event situations, that you'll feel ready to tackle them in your own way. But with that, that brings us to the end of our episode. Mary, you have our bonus tip this week.
Yes, I do. So for the bonus tip this week, it is that when you make proposals, to try to do them when the information is fresh in your brain. So depending on how you've gathered the information to create that proposal, you've talked with a potential client and they've given you all this information that you need to price it out. Don't wait like a week to make that, even if you take really good notes, because you're probably going to forget some things or part of the conversation that you had. So I would say for the bonus tip this week, it is to make and create those proposals when the information is fresh in your brain, soon after you've talked to the potential client, which also speeds up your timeline for sending them that proposal, but it'll be really helpful for your brains.
Thank you, Mary. A great one for building our business. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Better Events Pod. You can also connect with Mary or I directly on LinkedIn. We love hearing from you. You can also send us an email at bettereventspod@gmail.com. And as always, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back in your feeds again next Wednesday.